Good afternoon, Fargo. Thanks for joining the Steve Hallstrom Show. The voice you're hearing is not Steve. It is me, Tony Gehrig. I came over from WDAY just to do the show over here today. So this is my first time in this studio hosting a show. The buttons are different. The phone number is different. The email is different. So bear with me if I get any of those wrong. I will get it right by the end of the show. But do be part of the show. 701-271-1100. Email us at studio@flagfamily.com. And, of course, we have our text line, 701-237-1590. Steve has a pretty uniform show. Whenever I listen to him, you kind of know what you're going to get at about what time you're going to get it on the Steve Hallstrom show. I will try to stick with it a little bit. I have more guests than Steve tends to have. I like to hear other people talk more than myself and get their ideas about the issues of the day. And boy, are there a lot of issues. So I have three different groups of guests here, four in total, two here right now. Lots of news going on in Fargo, as always. If you open up the paper, turn on TV, you're going to hear about bomb threats. You're going to hear about police cameras. You're going to hear about the Red River Valley Fair and their funding. You're going to hear about ballot measures. And you're going to hear about taxes that happen that you're going to be voting on here in the coming election. We'll be talking about some of that on the show here today. We'll see how much we can get to about that. At the end of the show here, we'll make sure to pack in as much of that as we can for the last 45 or so minutes of the show, last two or three segments of the show. We'll talk about those things and others, and you can, of course, call in and give your opinion on those things. At 5 o'clock, we're going to have David Chapman, who's a lawyer here in the city of Fargo. He was a big advocate for RFK Jr., who is obviously not running for president anymore. So I wanted to get his opinion. He's in the know on the RFK situation, especially here locally. So I would love to get his opinion on RFK and his departure from the presidential race. However, as most of you know, he endorsed Donald Trump for president, which I think surprised a lot of people. Maybe it didn't surprise you. I don't know. Call in and tell me about it. At 4:30, so about a half hour here, Charlene Nelson, I'm going to call her a tax advocate. A taxpayer advocate is what I'm going to refer to her as. She's going to come on and talk about Measure 4, which is, of course, on the ballot to end property taxes here in this great state of North Dakota. What that would mean, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think you know where she's going to lean on it, since she's a taxpayer advocate. She probably wants to have less taxes. So that'll be the question for her. Okay, what are we going to do if we get rid of property taxes? How are we going to pay for things? Being a former city commissioner myself, I know we have to pay for things. How are we going to do that? But, you know, with all that happening, all things on the ballot, one of the things that's not on the ballot this year that I would have loved to see on the ballot is the ward system here for the city of Fargo. We'll talk about what that means and what the wards are versus what we're currently doing as a city commission with my two guests here today. Arlette Preston is a former Fargo city commissioner. And Marty Risky, what do we call you, an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's fair.
There we go. Marty, you own a bunch of businesses. You paid a lot of taxes before in your past.
Oh, yeah.
Arlette, you've owned businesses too.
Yep.
And paid a lot of taxes in the past.
Yep.
But
two entrepreneurs.
I like bringing you both on at the same time because I don't believe you two agree politically on a whole lot of things. But I think you agree politically on this particular issue, which is the ward system, something that I've advocated for on my former show, Thursdays with Tony on WDAY, which is no longer there. But I have not spoke about it here on the flag yet. So thank you both for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Arlette, why aren't wards on the ballot already? You were a city commissioner. I was a city commissioner. We could have made the vote. The two of us could have made that vote and get one more person to go with us, and that could have been on the ballot this year, last year, the year before, whatever. And it tended to never make it across the line. Do you know why there's a kind of a pushback from the city commission about the ward system? If you had to guess, you don't know, but
sure.
If you had to guess.
Well, it certainly wasn't for the lack of trying, that's for sure. So there was a task force that looked at it back in 2016-17 and came forward with some recommendations. All those recommendations were just kind of swept aside and nothing was done with them. But since then, in the last couple of years on my tenure in the city commission, we did have quite a few conversations inside the city commission about it and could never get past one mm-hmm. or perhaps two people that were interested in it.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, I truly believe, Tony, it probably is related to the fact that it truly is against the self-interest of individuals sitting up there. Because at least for four, not necessarily the mayor, but sure. The four commissioners would probably have been in a position to lose their seat.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that probably was it. Also, you know, just there's this anti-change kind of mm-hmm. mentality. It's been working forever, so why would we change it?
Sure.
When in fact, I would argue that it probably hasn't been working real well.
Right.
So I would say those were the two.
And Marty, before we start explaining exactly what the system would look like or what it is, why do people like you and Arlette and others feel like it would be a good idea to move towards a system where you'd have representation from parts of the city?
You know, my number one thing is that I do happen to know one or two of the current commissioners. But for most people, like, for example, when I first moved to Fargo, there was no one I could call and, you know, hey, we got this problem in our neighborhood, but
sure.
I don't know anybody. And mm-hmm. and not only that, but if they're not from my area,
right.
will they even have any interest in what our concerns are?
Sure.
So that's my number one thing. I think if at large worked, well, then we wouldn't have political districts. You know, we'd have 32 senators or 32 House representatives in California.
Yeah.
And that would be it. You
right.
know, they'd be at large.
Right.
But that's not the way it is. It's broken into districts. So I think it makes sense.
I think it's a fair point that we do that at a state level,
yep.
at a federal level. I understand city government is different. But yeah, I think it's something to consider. Arlette, we have a phone call specifically for you. Would you like to take a phone call?
Sure.
All right. It is Mark from Fargo.
Hi, Arlette.
Hi. Hi, Mark.
This is off topic, but it's in regards to your editorial letter that you wrote. So I'm hoping that I can... Are you okay if I ask you that?
I'm okay if Tony is.
Of course it is. Go ahead.
Say, I guess I'm wondering... What statistics or validation are you using to say downtown's safe? And what do you define as downtown? Because I can specifically recall three murders, several shootings, stabbings, and what time frame are... I think it's probably safe during the day, but it's a different animal at night.
Yeah, you know, I would agree. At night when the bars close down, it does get a little dicey sometimes. And it's not that it's completely safe. I mean, no place is completely safe. I think if we all think about and talk about the murders that have happened in the entire city, it's not just happening downtown. So, you know, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me here, but certainly the police department has provided statistics that show that, in fact, the violent crimes are down in both the city as well as in downtown. So that's the only thing that I can tell you right off the top of my head.
Sure. Oh, I guess I the only thing, I don't feel it's very safe. I guess I haven't been downtown at night in quite a while, but I'm a retired 30-year city employee who did data analysis specifically for the area, and the police department has a vested interest to say it's safe, right? Because their job's to lower crime. And I personally would, I have a 22-year-old, and I told him, whatever you do, don't go downtown if you're going out.
Mark, just for the interest of time.
That's just my opinion.
Thank you for the call. We got to take a break here in about a minute. Arlette, if you want to respond or whatever.
Just that, you know, I've been living downtown for 20 years mm-hmm. and go out on the sidewalk just about any time of the day.
Yep.
And my experience is definitely probably different than someone else's.
Sure.
But I have never felt unsafe.
Very good. Okay. Well, that's great. We're getting phone calls already, so I'm glad you're here, Arlette. I thought that might happen to you, actually. All right. Be part of the show. Steve Hall from Stroh here, hosted by Tony Gehrig today. 701-271-1100, just like the last caller, Mark, did. Email studio@flagfamily.com. You can also text us if you like, 701-237-1590. Producer Addison's taking us to break. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Hallstrom Show. I'm your host, Tony Gehrig. Steve is off location today, so he asked me to fill in. My first time in this studio, a little fish out of water, but it's been good so far. Addison's helping me through. Chris Larson will help with news, and hopefully Justin Storm will help with weather. And we'll get back into our guests here, Arlette Preston and Marty Riske. Arlette being a former city commissioner. Marty Riske is a businessman here in town, and we're talking about the ward system. And it kind of just struck me that we haven't really told the people what we're talking about yet. What would the ward system be like here in the city of Fargo, Arlette, for example? There are many ways to do it. What could one of those ways be?
Sure. The ward system, as compared to at large, means that your representation on the city commission would be elected from certain neighborhoods, and those boundaries would need to be set, but instead of everybody being elected at large. So what that means is if you live in, say, Southwest Fargo, you would have a person that lives in Southwest Fargo and would be elected by you and your neighbors instead of at the elected by the entire city.
Right.
So that's basically the difference.
Yeah. Okay. So just for an example, and why that matters maybe for people, when I was a city commissioner for 7 years, my first few years, Tony Grimberg and myself and Tim Mahoney lived within about 6 blocks of each other when we were on the commission together. Later, I moved to North Fargo, and then we had Dave Pepcorn, John Strand, Arlette, and myself. We all lived north of Maine. Tim Mahoney was the only representative in South Fargo south of Maine.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the benefit that I see from this. Yep. Is at least you get someone close to you.
Yes. And each neighborhood has different issues, different sure. concerns. So that's the advantage mm-hmm. for going with a ward system.
Marty, sounds great. Who would think there's a downside to that?
The people who are concerned about gerrymandering, and that's a method of moving boundaries to capture certain voting blocks. My concern as far as an individual person living in a community is I would like to know who will be concerned about whether I'm going to vote for him or not so that I have some power with
sure.
a politician. When it's an at-large, that's diminished. But when you know the person personally and you vote for that person mm-hmm. or against that person, then you have more power as a citizen.
Sure.
That's my reason for liking it.
And this could be for either one of you then. How many wards could there be, should there be, in your opinions, and nothing set in stone yet here, and who would then draw those lines, depending on how many wards you have, right? Either one you can go.
So there's certainly ways to try to protect against gerrymandering, and one of the ways is that there be a whole separate kind of appointed committee that would have experts as well as individuals from the community so that the elected officials are not the ones setting right. the boundaries, which I think would provide some protection there. I do think that, we've got a small group that I've been using kind of as a sounding board, and that group really believes that probably 6 wards should be the minimum. We have distinct and different neighborhoods in the city that would probably be interested in having their own individual representation. Let me also say on that regard that I think it's much easier for a neighborhood to hold a representative accountable to their concerns and their issues when they are elected from a smaller area in the community. It's a little bit easier to run an opposition mm-hmm. yep. to that individual. It's easier to be a candidate in a smaller portion of the city. It's really tough to run at large, and mm-hmm. it's expensive. So that's an additional reason for doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it too, because following up on your observation there, Arlette, you know, it's easier to walk door to door in
yes.
a defined community and spend nothing
yes.
and learn what's going on in your community and either be accepted or declined.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of another thing that I'd really like to see get out of politics is money. That money drives politics, and that's been poisonous for us, I think.
Yep. And it's the money issue has gotten to be, I think, more and more an issue, larger and larger issue. So I agree fully. It's a system that allows for the neighborhood to get to know their candidate and for the candidate to get to know the neighborhood. And that's really, in my mind, important.
I think
mine too.
When people look at the ward system and they're afraid of the change and they don't necessarily like that they're in a certain area, elected by a certain area, I wish they would, and I'm going to present this when I present this to the public, right? There are natural wards that happen here in the city of Fargo, right? People who vote for me tend to be in certain areas. People who vote for Arlette tend to be, let's be honest, downtown. A lot of downtown support for Arlette Preston and other places too. But when you look at the heat
core map, neighborhoods,
you're very red in those type of neighborhoods, right? And Iowa was more, the outskirts, way South Fargo, way North Fargo is where I would tend to get more of my votes. And you could go to Dave Pepcorn, you go to Tony Grimberg, you go to whoever and see where their vote support really was. We only have a couple minutes here left, but I think a lot of people here listening are thinking, okay, is this better for the right? Is it better for the left? Democrats, conservatives, which one do you think it's better for, if any? And either one of you can take that one, too. We got about 3 minutes.
Go ahead, Bernie.
I personally think that it balances things out pretty well, because you do have defined interests. I would say that, for example, with downtown, what I see, what I observe going on there is retirement. People are retiring downtown. It's single people. It's people who work downtown. It's that's that kind of environment. The kids are out of the nest, and we're going to sell our house, and we're going to move to a condo on the river, or something like that. That's a different need than a family with a house and three kids,
and a big yard, and a dog,
And so there's different issues there, and I think that. That's part of the politics involved. And here again, I think that your ward system has a better reflection in the politician of that neighborhood.
Yeah, I agree fully.
Beautiful. Well, thank you both for coming on today. I hope to see this on the ballot next year. We're not going to get it on this year, but hopefully next year it'll be on there and give people the options. There's going to be a lot of information passed around, good, bad, otherwise, about this subject. But I think if people look into it, they'll find the value in having that representation. And other communities have done it. We're not reinventing the wheel here.
That's right.
Other communities do it.
If I could just say, Fargo is the only city in the country, over 100,000 people, that still has a commission.
Is that true? I thought there was one in Oregon.
Really?
No. Portland switched.
Did they?
So we are the only city in the country, in the entire country. Yeah.
With over 100,000 people.
Over 100,000.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What's the reason? We got a minute.
I'm sorry?
What's the reason? We got a minute.
I truly believe it's because the commission form, and if you look at it, individual commissioners hold portfolios.
Sure.
So they manage basically a department or a few departments.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you can actually see that influence in the budgeting process this time around when the budget is tight. You can see people advocating for certain departments, not having the sense of the entire city.
So, all right.
It's parochial,
I think so. Arlette Preston, Marty Risky, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you next time. All right, on the other side of the break, we'll have Charlene Nelson. I'm calling her a taxpayer advocate, but Addison, do we have news and weather before that? All right, we'll have Chris Larson and Justin Storm give us our news and weather. All right, Chris, thanks for the news. Justin Storm for our weather.
Thanks there, Tony. We're looking at a nice day out there, 81 degrees right now here in Fargo, a couple degrees above where we should be for this time of year, and we'll just continue to see some nice weather as we head into the upcoming weekend. For the rest of this afternoon into the evening, do be expecting it to remain on the windy side or breezy side, however you want to categorize that. We have a northwest wind at 14 miles per hour, but it is gusting as high as 29 right now through Fargo, so that wind will stick around for the next couple of hours, but as we head closer to sunset, that wind will start to lighten up, and the wind will stay, for the most part, pretty light tonight, about 5 to 10. eventually switching out of the south. We'll drop down to a low in the upper 50s with clear skies for tonight, and we'll warm back to the low a few, very few, mid-80s for Saturday afternoon south of I-94. We'll top out about 83, 84 here in Fargo with mainly sunny to partly cloudy skies, but it will turn again on the windy side as a cold front drops down by the afternoon. That's going to have our temperatures drop into the 70s throughout the afternoon, and wind will switch out of the north, about 10 to 20 gusting upwards of 30 miles an hour. So another breezy, borderline windy day for your Saturday. And as we head into Saturday night, it is going to get a bit chilly. Temperatures will drop into the upper 40s and low 50s. So a cool start to your Sunday morning, but we'll rebound nicely into the mid 70s with sunny skies and light north winds on Sunday. And for your Monday to wrap up the extended weekend, another nice sunny day, a little bit of a breeze, about 10 to 20 miles per hour again out of the south, but temperatures will be in the upper 70s. So a nice dry weekend. The really only chance for showers is going to be found up in northern Minnesota later in the day on Saturday. Otherwise, here across North Dakota, most of Lakes Country and the Red River Valley, we're looking at a dry and sunny week ahead, Tony. And this weather is brought to you by Air Mechanical of Fargo.
All right, Justin, thank you. Sounds like good sleeping weather with those nice cool nights.
Indeed, yeah. After a nice night tonight near 60, upper 50s, we're looking at upper 40s and low 50s both Saturday and Sunday night. And for the rest of next week, it looks like we'll see temperatures balancing out in the 50s and 60s for overnight lows.
Very good. Thanks again.
No problem.
All right, folks, we'll see you on the other side of the break here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Tony Gehrig filling in the seat on a beautiful Friday. Be part of the show, 701-271-1100. I keep wanting to say the WDAY call or the number because that's where I used to work for so long. Email studio@flagfamily.com and you can text into our texting line, 701-237-1590. Had a good discussion about the ward system here. Marty Risky is going to hang out with me for this next segment. He knows a lot about the next subject as well. Charlene Nelson, I am calling you a taxpayer. What did I say? Advocate. How would you describe yourself?
That's a good enough word. Taxpayer agitator, perhaps.
All right. We need that sometimes here in our current system. But right now we're talking about Measure 4. Do you just want to tell people what that is? Because there's a lot of information out there, half of which it's usually half correct. You know what I mean? So why don't you just give them the full picture of what this thing is?
Okay, so what Measure 4 says is it does two things that are really important. First of all, it says we can no longer have a tax that is based on the value of your property. And as we all know, this value is such a volatile, unpredictable, and irrational number to begin with. And so this measure just says no more. No more property tax based on the value of your home. The second thing it does is it says that the tax revenues that the counties and cities and so forth will be collecting in 2024 will be then converted after that in 2025 into a sort of block grant. That is, that amount of money will be sent to all the political subdivisions. So there will be no reduction in revenues at all. And it sort of provides a cushion for local governments to adjust their budgets and to figure out going forward how they want to budget their money and devise whatever type of revenue generating system they want.
Okay, Marty, you have anything to add to that? I think that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think so too. The I guess the one thing that I would add to the setup is that my own feeling as a homeowner is that I like the idea that, for example, with sales tax, I know precisely how much I'm paying,
right?
And it can't change unless it changes politically. With the home thing, you know, our homes get adjusted according to the market, and when the market isn't going up, then they can change the mill levy. So either way, you can get an increase in taxes on your home, and it's all totally arbitrary.
Thank you. Addison, do we have 2 minutes before break or do we have more time? Okay. Okay, thank you. Charlene, are you saying that I can't tax your property? Is that what you're saying to me?
Whatever tax we go with going forward after the passage of Measure 4 cannot be based on the value of your property, on an assessed value of your property.
So you can still tax the property. For example, let's say a $40 road fee or whatever you want to call it. You can still do that.
Yeah, you'd have to call it something like that, like a road fee or a household fee or something else. But it won't be a property tax, at least not in the sense that we know property tax to be. Your property's not going to be held hostage to an arbitrary or capricious tax that, like Marty said, you can't control it. You have no idea what your tax is going to be from year to year. You have no way to budget or to work that into your family's, you know, expense book the way it is currently devised. And we want to put an end to that, and we want to say, you know, the cities, the state, the counties, and so forth, they need to come up with a tax that is transparent, fair, and comprehensible, something that the taxpayers can understand.
Right. I just want to make it clear to everybody listening. So when I ask that question, they can't tax your property, right? Uh-huh. Well, the reality is right now your property is being taxed, and it's going up automatically with your value. That's the big change here. So
right.
I can charge you $40 for your road fee or what, just like your garbage or something like that. I can charge you for that.
Right.
But it doesn't go up automatically every year if you put new shingles on your house, right? That's the biggest difference that I want to make very clear to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that too. Yeah. You know what you're paying.
Right. Okay. So what I did was I went on the website for the folks who are advocating against Measure 4. And we have a few more minutes here, so I'm just going to start playing the devil's advocate with you two, and we'll see what you guys say, okay? one that was recently brought to my attention was, well, hey, all you're doing is making landlords richer. Why would we want to make landlords richer? They're not paying property taxes anymore. Is my rent going down? Why would we want the landlords to make more money?
I'll take that.
Well, first of all...
Go ahead,
okay,
Charlene.
Okay, go ahead, Marty.
No, Charlene, go ahead. We'll just for sake of time. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, one thing it'll do is it'll open up the housing market to first-time home buyers. So there are going to actually probably be fewer renters, because now all these people that have been kept out of the housing market because they can't afford the property tax are now going to be able to afford those starter homes.
Sure.
And that creates a competitive market for renters. Will the landlords continue to pay, you know, charge high rent? I don't know. They might not want to if they see that their renters have other choices besides just renting from them.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that renters and landlords are going to get rich off of this. That's silly.
Marty?
Yeah, well, as a business person, I can attest right here that competition levels that out.
Yeah.
You know, the guy in the next building lowers his rent according to what the lower property tax is. And if you don't change your price, then everybody moves over to the other building.
I think the free market is a great thing. all right. Along that same vein, okay, maybe this will be the last question before a break here, Addison. All you're doing is making Bill Gates rich, right? People are buying up land in North Dakota, and we don't like that because we don't like rich people or something. I don't know. But all they're saying is that you're making the richer even more richer than they already are.
Well, go look up how much Governor Burgum pays on property tax on all his businesses downtown. And you tell me who's paying property tax. It's not the rich. The rich are already getting all the exemptions. It's the middle class. It's the family homeowner, you know, the regular families in North Dakota that are paying the property tax. The well-connected, the wealthy, the politically connected, they get their exemption.
Marty?
The other thing about that is that that's how you get clean industry is somebody that's got labs or office buildings or something like that. They're attracted to no property tax, and so that's how you get clean industry. And people that require large facilities. I like that kind of business coming to North Dakota.
We talk about attracting businesses to North Dakota all the time. We talk about diversifying our portfolio away from energy and farming. And
spend millions.
Yeah, into technology and hospitals and those type of things. We want more and more of that stuff to happen here. And then the minute we find this great tool of getting rid of property taxes, we say, well, how dare you want to help the rich people get richer? And it's like, what do you guys want? What exactly do you want from me? You know, so, all right, I've got a bunch more of these, Charlene and Marty Risky. Addison, let's just go to break a little bit early, and then we can finish up this conversation. Hey, be part of the show. Maybe you think we're wrong, and maybe this is a terrible idea. Call in. Trust me, I talk to people every single day that don't like this idea, but I think that for the most part, they don't fully understand it. And as long as we're on the same sheet of music about what this thing is and what it actually does, then you are welcome to your opinion, and please share on the show here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Is it done now, Addison?
It's done now, probably.
Welcome back. This is Tony Gehrig, obviously filling in for Steve. The timing's off. It's not my show. It's a whole different area. It's on a different wing of the building, even. Buttons are different. I'm figuring it out. I'm getting through it, guys. Having a good time doing it, too. Charlene Nelson and Marty Risky sitting here talking about Measure 4 and property taxes. I am just going to play the devil's advocate for this. And you can, too. Be part of the show. Call in. Ask them questions. Charlene, one of my favorite ones that I've gotten so far is, it's unfair to get rid of property taxes because you have $1 million house. I have a $250,000 house. And now we're both going to pay a $40 road fee? How dare you? How dare you be so greedy?
Well, do I use the road four times as much as you do? Does the snow fall four times more by my house than it does you? Do I have four times the crime, the police calls that you do? Are my services four times better than yours?
It's a good one. Marty?
Yeah, but going back to the set fee, I know I'm paying $40. Nobody can come along and say, now it's $80.
Right.
That's my number one
without
thing.
Without a vote of the city council or whatever else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the transparency piece of it. And my other thing is, hey, we all pay for the same amount of garbage. You know what I mean? Those type of things are set, and it's set for a reason. It's less fair for, yeah. I don't want to pay $5,000 a year so I can feel like things are fair. You know what I mean? How about this? How about I can feel unfair for $5,000? Thank you. I'll take my $5,000 back for that one. The biggest one that you're going to hear from anyone who is opposed to this Measure 4 of getting rid of property taxes here in the state of North Dakota is going to be, you want to guess what it is, Marty? What's the biggest argument against it?
It makes wealthy people wealthier.
Yeah, Charlene, what do you think? The biggest argument against it.
How are we going to pay for it?
Nah, local control. You guys are both wrong.
Local control.
How dare you take away my local control? Now you're going to make the city of Fargo beg the people in Bismarck for our dollars every year to pay for our police and fire and roads and all that stuff. How dare you, Charlene?
No, the fact is Fargo knows from day one how much they're getting from the state, and they're going to get that amount forever and ever till the end of time or some catastrophic event. That is the amount that the city of Fargo will get all the time without begging, without having to jump through any hoops, or fulfill any requirements, that's theirs to spend as they wish. The question is, when we talk about local control, are we talking about control that the state has over local government, or the control that local government has over the people? Because right now, I feel very little local control. I have zero say in what happens to those taxes going up. That's the local control I'm concerned about.
Marty?
That's a great point. You know, and that's, I just want to reinforce that. You know, if you don't have control over what you have to pay in taxes, you don't have any control.
Sure.
That's just a myth.
Yeah, and here's the reality. The people against this measure use that as a great scare tactic, and they used it back in 2012, and they used it ever since whenever. They're trying to suggest that somehow you can no longer tax a person's property. And Charlene and I have already spoken to this to say, yes, you can tax a person's property. You just can't do it based off the value of the property. And that's a distinction with a major difference. So it's not insignificant to say that my taxes can't go up because of the value. It is significant to say, if you want to raise my taxes on my home, you're going to have to vote publicly on that city commission or city council to do so. Bill, you're on the phone and you want to ask a question.
Yeah, well, I'm for getting rid of these property taxes, and here's my thought on it. All right, most of us, we don't own gold and all this stuff. Our only value, the only thing we're worth is our property. Like, I have 10 acres, and I own it. but I still have to pay on it every year.
Yeah, you do.
I got to pay taxes. Somebody could take that away from me if I couldn't pay my taxes for some reason, let's say medical or whatever happens. I could lose it. And I don't think that's right. I think that we all should have something that is ours, completely ours, tax-free, that's ours.
Especially when it's your home.
On it anyway.
Thanks, Bill. Go ahead.
Yes,
Ryan.
It's...
You know, when I got rid of all my debt and everything, and I thought, what's the last risk I have in my life? Because I'm still in business, and business is risky.
Yep.
I thought, man, you know, I could lose my home if things reverse, big recession or something like that happened to me. So I called the state, the county treasurer, and I said, can I pay my property taxes in advance? So that I sold a building and, go ahead and put it into that and make sure that, get rid of that risk of losing my home when I'm old. Because I saw that happen to some widows. Sure. And they said, nope, you can't pay 1 minute in advance.
Really?
Nope. You have to, each year it's
determined. Well, I suppose it changes every year because the value of property goes up every year, right?
Yeah. So they don't want you to prepay.
Well, here we go. Here's the other big one that you guys both brought up. How are we going to pay for it?
Charlie? I think this is an interesting question because no one ever asked me how I'm going to pay for the property tax bill. They just send me the bill. And it's gone up. In the last 3 years, our property tax has gone up 73%. And I can guarantee you our income hasn't gone up that much. And no one came and asked me and said, Charlene, is it okay? We got to increase spending. We're going to boost your property tax 20% this year. Is that all right? No. They went ahead and did it. So all we're saying now, and the truth is, the state and local governments have money all over the place. In fact, I have a recording, a YouTube press conference that Governor Burgum gave about a year ago, not quite a year ago, saying that the state has billions with a B laying around just waiting to be applied to lowering taxes. So there you go. Governor Burgum says we have billions that we can apply to lowering taxes for the people in North Dakota.
I think one of the things that a lot of people overlook or don't know about is the Common Schools Trust Fund.
Oh, sure.
There's billions in that. And, one thing that we could do there that would be a lot different is, first of all, pay off all the school bond issues and get the money out of at-risk investments in New York. There's a lot of ways that money could be freed up.
And the last thing I'll say about that is what's often overlooked too is the economic impact of not having property taxes on the state of North Dakota.
Yeah.
Again, you're going to get more businesses that come here. You're going to get more investments from big tech companies and Mr. Wonderful, all those type of folks.
Intel.
Yeah, exactly. Because they have less burden here if they move to North Dakota. That brings employees with it. That brings other opportunities with it. Instead of me paying $5,000, which is what I pay, the exact average home in the city of Fargo is $300,000. That's my home. That's what I'm assessed. Okay, I pay $5,000 a year just for that. That's an incredible burden for every family, for anyone. If I had $5,000 in my pocket, I might put a new roof on. I might put down pay my new car. I might get, whatever. Oh, I could do a million different things with it. Send my kid to private school. I don't know. You know what I mean? There's all that economic impact for that. So, Charlene, we're out of time here. It went so fast. We'll do it again next time I have an opportunity. Marty, thank you so much for sticking around for the second segment.
Bye, Charlene.
And
Marty, for
all those who emailed and called in, thank you for that as well. On the other side of the break, after news and weather again, right, Addison? News and weather again. We're going to have David Chapman to come on, talk about RFK and his impact in leaving this presidential race. We'll see you then. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. The voice still is not Steve. It is Tony Gehrig. It is I. Jumping over from the WDAY studio over to here to bring you this show today. Usually at this time, Steve would give you his top five at five. I'm going to wait. I'm going to do that like the 5:30. Top five at 5:30. We'll talk about some news articles and news issues that are happening here in our city, in our region. One of those things I'm going to tackle at the bottom of the hour, most likely, is going to be the camping issue. I'd love to get everyone's thoughts on this. This is one of those subjects it's not easy. Some people just want to rest their way out of it. That's one way to go. Some people want to spend $20 million a year to build a, I don't know, an apartment complex for them. That's one way to go, I suppose. And there's people in the middle. And I'm sure most of you are kind of like me going, we got to do something, but I'm not quite sure what. I talked to Arlette Preston about it when she was in the studio at the beginning of the show, a former city commissioner like myself. And we were bouncing ideas off of each other. And I thought that was very interesting. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the police cameras. It's been in the news quite a bit. Rob Port wrote an op-ed or a column, I should say, about the subject. I found myself agreeing with a lot of what he said. You say what you want about Rob. He's turned a little left, I know. But I think in this scenario, I think him and I agree on a lot of this stuff. And, you know, some of you might think it's anti-cop to not be 100% on board with everything that they want to do. But I'm going to give you some good reasons why I am not jumping with both feet in support of sticking up cameras all over the city of Fargo and calling it good and we've beaten crime. And, of course, we got to talk about the measures. We got to talk about the spending that the city of Fargo wants to do on the ballot. If there's three different ways they want to raise your taxes on this coming election, and I'm going to tell you how I'm probably going to vote on these three, unless you can call in and change my mind. And I hope you do. I hope you try. David Chapman is here today to talk about the RFK run for president. David, thanks for being here. You're a lawyer here in town. Tell people who you are, and then we'll talk about RFK a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a lawyer here in town, and I've been a Republican forever until RFK announced that he was running for president. Mm-hmm. And I actually crossed the aisle and supported him as a Democrat when he was running for the nomination in the Democratic Party.
Interesting.
But it became immediately clear that every possible roadblock was being thrown in his way by the DNC and by the Biden administration, and he eventually left and became an independent.
So you crossed aisles, I didn't know that, and became a Democrat?
Yes.
To vote for RFK. What drew you to him so dramatically? Because I think that's a big move for someone who considers themselves more of a conservative, more of a Republican for the majority of their life.
I would think that the biggest issue that I saw was the concern over censorship and the way that there's been controls on speech going on.
Yep,
sure. We have reports of a what they called a secret portal in the White House that they monitored social media through. Now, they're now denying and backpedaling and saying they never told anyone to censor anybody on social media. But former press secretary Jen Psaki had something else to say. She said, yes, they do monitor. And just this week, we had Mark Zuckerberg write in and say, absolutely, the Biden administration pressured us continuously to censor people on social media.
So, boy, that's wild, isn't it, that he actually came out and admitted that?
Yes, yeah.
Why do you suppose he did that?
That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly why he would have done that.
I've got my guess, and I think it's because he's afraid that if Trump wins, he's have his huge target on his back because of that. Well, if he comes out now and kind of says, oops, I'm sorry, we'll fix it going forward, hopefully he doesn't get, you know, he doesn't get whacked, you know?
And nothing's changed. Yeah. I mean, try posting certain things on, I heard from somebody that if you try posting anything from something called InfoWars, I'm not even sure what that is.
That was the Alex Jones. Yeah.
Okay. If you try posting that, they won't let it be posted.
Right.
I got into a discussion with somebody who was talking about the swamp, as Trump has referred to it. And I said, yeah, well, a lot of these people who are trying to restrict our freedoms are swamp creatures, basically, and we should drain the swamp.
Uh-huh.
I immediately got flagged, and up came this box that said, this violates our community standards and must be deleted. But just 2 weeks ago, somebody was on there just railing against Donald Trump, and all sorts of sexual comments were being made. And I thought, you know, it was pretty vile.
Mm-hmm.
That was okay. Didn't violate any community standards.
Whose standards? You know what I mean? That's the
exactly.
thing I was asking myself is, you've breached the community standards. Yeah, maybe my standards aren't your standards.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so I guess in my mind, the first question that when I saw him shaking hands and I saw the speech, I briefly watched, I didn't watch the whole thing. And RFK is saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. I'm dropping out and I'm supporting Donald Trump. My first thought was, is that what Republicans wanted? Because as many things that I could agree with RFK on certain issues, and it doesn't matter what I believe, but on certain things I did agree with him. But I think people often quickly forget that that doesn't make him a conservative. You know, he is in no way a Republican. He in no way matches up with probably the vast majority of North Dakota Republicans wouldn't say RFK is a conservative of any kind. The same with people like Tulsi Gabbard, who I have a ton of respect for. Her military service, some of the ways that she handled herself during the debates, you know, when she was running, some of the things she's come out ever since then about things like censorship as well. But she's not a conservative, you know what I mean? So do you think that the Republican Party is happy that RFK endorsed Donald Trump?
I think they are, because I think when it comes down to it, from what I heard from the Kennedy campaign themselves, I think it was RFK himself who said that the opinion polls internally were telling him that he took more votes from Donald Trump than he did from Kamala Harris.
Really?
And as a result, that would cause some concern. There are a lot of Republicans in the campaign. They actually have a Facebook page for conservatives and independents for Robert F. Kennedy. And they're all very solidly Republican that are on there. So I think that Republicans should be happy that he has endorsed Donald Trump, because I think there's a lot of support going to go that way. I think at one point the estimate was that 60% of his support was Republicans.
I mean, I could see that. If nothing else, I think you're right. I think that he was more of a spoiler for the Democrats, if anything else. Do you think that the Democrats or the left or whatever however you wanted to call them, do you think they wanted his endorsement? Are they mad right now because they didn't get the endorsement? Or are they mad because he endorsed Donald Trump?
I don't think they're going to be surprised that he endorsed Donald Trump after what they did to him, starting with New Hampshire. The morning that he spoke to the New Hampshire legislature, the threat was already on the table that if New Hampshire did not accept not being first in the nation primary and surrendered to South Carolina, where they thought Biden would win easily, that they would not seat any of the delegates that Kennedy won in New Hampshire at the Democratic National Convention. They said the same thing to Iowa as well. And it was just one thing after another, the Secret Service protection, denying him that. It was designed to have him burn campaign funds, paying for his own security. Suing to keep him off the ballots was the same thing, was to keep his message under wraps so that he couldn't get his message out. He had to spend on lawyers. So it was one thing after another with them. They changed rules at the convention. They did all sorts of things to try and keep him out of the limelight and keep him away from any kind of nomination. Tried to keep him, did keep him off the debate stage as well. Treated him like he wasn't a major candidate.
Sure. Well, very good. We'll go to a break here, Addison. But we have a lot more to get to, especially considering now that it has happened and there has been an endorsement made. How much is the impact? Does it matter at all? I mean, is it a wash? Is it a big deal? You'll know better than I do. And that's why David Chapman is here, a lawyer here in Fargo, and he was a supporter of RFK here locally. I think you were a delegate or you were a...
I was an alternate elector.
There you go. Alternate. Okay. We'll be back on the other side of the break here on the Steve Holsham Show, hosted by Tony Gehrig. Welcome back to the show, hosted by Tony Gehrig. Looking through the text line. I appreciate you guys texting during the show. We're getting a lot of them, actually. One of them is about the rent and rent going up $200 in the last 2 years. Trust me, it's not any cheaper to own a home right now. My taxes have gone up. I bought my house for $80,000 less 5 years ago than what I'm paying my taxes in right now. So it's rough all around. One of the texters said, can you explain why the Fargo Park Department is not part of the city budget? And it goes on from there. You have to understand that there's local subdivisions, right? So the city is nothing more than a subdivision of the state. So the city is a subdivision. The county is a subdivision. Same powers. They both make laws. They both tax you. They both spend money. Parks the same way. They make their laws on their property. They collect tax dollars through your property taxes and through fees, and they spend money. You know, there's others out there. The school board is its own taxing authority. It's its own subdivision. So the city and the parks and the county and the schools have nothing to do with each other. Other than that, they all operate in part or in full by your property taxes. So when you're paying your property taxes, about 50% of that goes to the schools, About 17% from each goes to the parks, the city, the county. So when we talk about the city giving away tax incentives, and the city of Fargo votes to get to allow someone to not pay property taxes for 15, 20, 40 years, the reason that's so bad is because the city's basically taking money. Not basically. It is taking money away from the schools. It is taking money away from the parks. It is taking money away from the county and the airport and vector control. And it's just about that vote that they take right there. Thanks for the question. Now, back to the subject at hand. David Chapman, a lawyer here in Fargo, talking about RFK, talking about his run. He obviously dropped out and endorsed Donald Trump. Do you think he would have endorsed VP Harris if they gave him something? Hey, here, if we win, you get to be whatever, you know?
I have a hard time believing that, that he would, primarily because of the conduct that was visited on him with all of the interruptions in his campaign and the attempts to haul him into court and to keep him off the ballot, keep him off the debate stage. I think that what he was seeing was a lot of authoritarian type conduct from the DNC, and he basically said, you know, that's not the party I was a part of.
Yeah.
It's not my uncle's party,
right.
My father's party.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I have a hard time believing he would accept anything.
I think he asked. Like, in my mind, I think he went there and they said no. I really do believe that. I think it just would have been easier for him. You know, his whole family is obviously part of that side of the aisle, you know. He's supposed to be over there. Now he's got his own family mad at him. You know what I mean? I think he would have. That's just my feeling. I don't know the guy like you know the guy, but that's a feeling that I've got. How big of an impact is this? Is this a small impact? Is it going to be a 2-point bump for whoever would have got the endorsement? Is it going to be a swing, like a 5-point swing? Is this going to be, you know, something major? What percent of his voters are going to move over because of this?
I think that the way that they looked at it was that, and I saw this, I can't remember where I saw it, talking about swing states and where Harris and Trump were neck and neck in swing states, it would be a net 2 to 3% for Trump.
That'd be huge.
In those states, yes. So it would be a huge swing. A lot of the stuff regarding the campaign is not publicized. I mean, they had 100,000 volunteers signed up. To do phone calls and door knocking and everything else. They also had lots of people out there gathering signatures because they made it so difficult to get signatures to get on the ballot. So it's not a small campaign. It's not one of your unheard of third party campaigns. So I think it will have a big impact. And I think that impact will go to former President Trump.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, because if it's anything like that, because, I mean, Ross Perot was like the last guy that mattered, right?
As far
as the third party. Do you remember what he got for a vote? Was it like 5% or something?
No, I think it was like either 16 or 19.
Oh, that's huge.
The vote.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
So that's a lot of people believe that's the reason why, obviously, Bush didn't win.
Yes.
That election is because Ross Perot pulled at least enough away from him to do that. And that's like 16%. What would have RFK have taken home in the aggregate, like total? Is it that 5%? Is it somewhere around that?
He was polling at 5% according to all the polls nationally. A lot of them differed because in some of the swing states, he showed better numbers than others. 37% of the public were willing to consider an independent in this election. So the numbers were all over the place. But I think nationally, like Real Clear Politics and averages like that had him in around 5%.
Did you ever think that he was going to win?
I thought he would have had a chance.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. At one point, when I crossed the aisle and was going to support him in the primaries as a Democrat, I thought, yes, if it's fair and if he goes on the debate stage against Joe Biden, he's going to beat Joe Biden. Democrats will vote for him. And I don't think people looking at Joe Biden would have thought that he's up to a second term and it would have been Kennedy who would have been the nominee. But once he left and went independent, I initially stopped and I went back to just supporting Donald Trump. And I kind of kept an eye on things and I decided, you know, I really still like the guy as a candidate. So I went back and joined the independent campaign then.
Very good. All right. You're listening to the Steve Hallstrom Show. 701-271-1100. Email studio at flag, family.com. I'm Tony Garrick filling in for Steve today. Thanks for all you who are texting in right now. Do you think he thought he could win? I know that you think he did. Do you really legitimately think that he thought he could win?
I think he did. And at one point in time, you know, when the hope was that he ended up on a debate stage with the other
right.
two candidates.
That would have been huge, too.
And once that door was closed,
yeah.
there was no way to get the message out at that point, I think. And he kind of saw the writing on the wall. And that's why, in his speech, he said, I don't see any path to the White House at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if you're not going to get on the debate, that's the biggest way to get a huge audience right in front of you.
Right.
For basically free. You know what yes. I mean? And that's when people start moving around quite a lot, I think. Do you think that Trump gave him anything for endorsement?
I don't think so. I think that the two of them had spoken after the assassination attempt on former President Trump, and Kennedy respected him then for the discussion that he had with him. And I think at that point in time, you know, he would like to be involved. He's on the transition team.
Yep, I know that.
Him and Tulsi Gabbard. So I think that one of his big messages and one of the things that drew me was a unity message that, you know, quit waking up every morning and feeling like you hate everybody on the other side of the aisle. And that was a part of his message. And I think that's part of this whole transition team. He said hoping to have a unity government.
Yeah. Yep. I saw that part too. All right. A couple minutes left here. The biggest question I have is, why does the left hate him so badly now? I mean, I know a lot of them didn't necessarily like him for running, if just period, right? They were a little miffed at that for obvious reasons, I think. I've read articles now, at least two articles that I read, were just mean. One of them called people who support him double haters, meaning they hate both the left and the right. The other one called them low information voters, which is, yeah, that's an old insult, but it's like you're telling a whole group of, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people that are just low information for not wanting to vote left or right. You know what I mean?
Right.
And now he's the chainsaw wielding whale butcher or whatever they're calling him now. It's just mean. In 1 minute, why are they being so mean? He's out.
Because he has basically abandoned the legacy that they saw of JFK as this great hero of the left. And the fact that he came out publicly and said that the party that he's seeing now is not the party of John F. Kennedy. It's not the party of Robert Kennedy. And they've completely abandoned those roots. And as a result, he doesn't recognize the party anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's why they're so mad at him.
I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it perfectly. David Chapman, we are out of time. Thank you for coming in and talking about the RFK thing. I found it very interesting. I enjoyed his run. I'm glad he did it. It opens up people's eyes to different ideas out there. And it's great to see how he was treated and, you know, and how that all works. So thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. To the listeners, we'll go back here on the second to last segment here. We'll be talking about local news. Be part of the show. Call in, text line us, and email us, and we'll see you on the other side of the break. Welcome back to the Steve Holstrom Show. Tony Garrick hosting today while Steve is out. It's a nice day to be out, Addison.
It's a very nice day outside. It's delightful.
If you're going to be out for one day, today would be the day to be out.
Better than yesterday was.
What was wrong with yesterday?
It was a little rainy.
Was it?
I think I was told. I don't know.
I'm inside all the time.
I'm a late sleeper. Sometimes I just wake up and the world outside has changed.
Yeah. I hear you. Be part of the show. 701-271-1100. studio@flagfamily.com. And there's been some activity on the texting line. That's good. 701-237-1590. Usually it's the top stories at 5, but now we're going to get to some top stories, the things that I think are top stories, at 5:34 and 49 seconds. What do you want to hear about first, Addison? Do you want to hear about camping, which means homelessness in the city of Fargo, and what they're going to do about it? Do you want to hear about police cameras that would be on the street type cameras, not body worn, but like surveillance cameras, we'll call it that. Or do you want to hear about how I would vote for the three spending issues here in the city of Fargo?
The police cameras, that story interests me. I would like to hear more about that.
Good. So this has been a passion of mine for probably 12 to 13 years. Even more, whatever. It's been a long time, over a decade. I was a young man. living in South Fargo, and the police came out with the idea of putting 12 cameras downtown Fargo. They got a grant for it, obviously, so that's always the positive thing. They get a grant for these type of things. And they were going to spend, you know, $80,000. And so that's just a little bit of money, no big deal. And they were going to make sure they're going to lower crime. So what they always say is they will prevent and solve crimes with cameras. And the big thing people want to hear, want to see is that prevention piece, right? That's the big winner for ideas such as this, that promise prevention. Okay. Only one problem with stating that is that cameras have never, public cameras have never prevented crime. Okay. There's a reason for that. But before people start flying off the handle, I have looked at every city I could possibly get my hands on and see what their stats are for when they put up these cameras, these public, police-owned cameras. And what city could say, hey, we reduced crime from this to this. Without cameras, it was this. The next year with cameras, it was this. It's a win. There's not a city out there that can do that. Not one. And there are cities out there that have cameras everywhere. And they don't reduce crime. Why? That's a good question. Why? Mostly it's because if you don't know where the cameras are, how can you prevent crime? Think about it. If you knew that there was a camera right over there, you wouldn't steal that chair because that camera's pointed at you. But if you don't know where the cameras are, or if they're police owned, then what do you care? You think you're not being watched. So unless you know where the cameras are, and if you know where the cameras are, you can avoid them, right? Instead of doing a crime over there, I do it over there because I know there's not a camera over there. So there's a big flaw in this argument that we will reduce and prevent crime and solve crime. Okay? It's been tried, folks. Fargo, you're not new at this. It's been tried everywhere. In states across the country, in North America here, in London, everywhere it's been tried. And when it started in 2012 or 2011, whatever it was, I forget, Denny Walker was the mayor. I went and spoke in front of the city commission as a 25-year-old protesting this. They said, well, it's only 80 grand or whatever it was. I don't remember how much it was. Okay. But it was like less than 100,000. Maybe it was 50, something like that. Okay. It wasn't a ton of money. It wasn't millions of dollars. It's only 8 to 12 cameras and we can move them around and it'll do all these great things. Well, as they do, this government program got bigger and now the cameras can use AI, and they've been doing this for years, by the way, and they can record the make and model of your vehicle. They can zoom in automatically without anyone touching the camera or controlling the camera into your license plate, into your face, into whatever, and capture all of your goings-ons. I don't know about you, but to me, that's invasive. I don't want to be under surveillance from my government if there's no cause. So the argument always is, from folks who think I'm wrong about this, is, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, then why do you care? I love that argument because it doesn't hold water. That's the whole point of the Constitution, folks. You're protected from unlawful searches and seizures, especially when you're not doing anything wrong. And they have to get a warrant if they think you've done something wrong. You can't just track somebody for no reason because you want to stop crime. You can't take away liberty for security. It never works. I think that was Ben Franklin who said that. That's the point of the First, Fourth, Fifth Amendment. I'm sure I'm forgetting other ones. The government just can't walk into your house and toss your bedroom and look for drugs if there's no cause. They can't just pull you over for no reason and search your car. And they can't track you for no reason if there's no cause for them to do so. If you're under suspicion of crime and they think they got some proof of it, if they got probable cause, I understand. Okay, get a warrant and go nuts. I want crime to be prevented too. I want crime to be reduced too. This is not how you do it. Ryan, tell me how I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you are, Tony.
Okay.
I absolutely agree with you. But what I wanted to share, what I wanted to share with you was a few rules of thumb when it comes to government policies and programs writ large. And I think that the surveillance cameras are a beautiful, beautiful example of this. But anytime government proposes anything, you can just about know it'll never come in under budget. It'll almost always come in over budget. There will be unintended deleterious effects, and nobody in the halls of power will want to take responsibility for the bad.
Boy, you nailed it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And the nature of a program like this, the exact nature of this thing is that it will have to grow to be effective. Having 12 cameras wasn't enough. So he said,
if it's effective at all,
right?
If it's effective at all, it's better to assume that it won't be. But then it justifies growth. Well, it's not working now. Let's put in more cameras.
Precisely.
Well, that's no guarantee that it's going to work. But it's just like a parasitic growth or a bottom feeding fish that always grows to the size of its tank. You give it a bigger tank, it just grows more.
Beautiful. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. Yep. And that was kind of my closing argument: is these things never right size. They grow and grow and grow. And then they can't say it's not working. They can say it's not working because there's not enough. Or they say it's not working because they're in the wrong area. Crime has moved, you see. It's moved. Therefore, we got to move the cameras or get more cameras to cover that area too now. And don't get me wrong. I have cameras in my house. I have a Ring doorbell and I have other cameras. I got a lot of them. Okay. But that's effective for me. In my purposes, I want to know who's on my front door before I answer it. Okay? I want to know when my kid comes to my house. If I'm not going to be there right away, I want him to know he's home safe. And cameras can and do help solve crimes. I will give you that. I will give you that one. It does not prevent crime. Cameras help solve crimes. And do you know whose cameras help solve the most crimes? Privately owned cameras, Ring doorbells, the camera inside of your local store or your local, you know, Casey's, your gas station. Okay. That's where we need an expansion of cameras. If you believe that government owned cameras is going to keep your home safe or your business safe, you are sorely mistaken. If you believe putting up cameras in your own establishment, your own home will help keep your home safer, I think you got an argument there. But it doesn't go both ways. And again, I want someone to tell me, give me an example. Call in and give me an example where this worked. I've been fighting this battle for a long time. I've never voted for this expansion of this program. I have voted to get rid of this program. It keeps growing with very little effect. If you haven't read Rob Port's column about this, it's very good. And he makes the point. This is not an anti-cop argument. You know, cops don't get everything 100% right, guys, right? So just because you disagree with them on this camera issue doesn't mean you're anti-cop. And by the way, I'm going to tell you how I'm going to vote on the spending measures after the break here. It's also not anti-cop to vote no against more spending for the fire department and the police department. A sales tax, that be. All right, so let's talk about that on the other side. Like, we'll start with that, Addison. We'll start with how I'm going to vote. We'll get to camping if there's enough time. And it'll be the last segment for the Steve Hallstrom Show, produced by Addison and guest host Tony Gehrig. Welcome back to the show, hosted by Tony Gehrig. Thanks to Steve for letting me host his show, my first time doing it. I said the email correctly, I think. The phone number, I think I got correct. It was hard, but I got there, man. Different numbers and different setup here than on WDAY. So thanks for everyone for listening and putting up with me for the show today. We are not done, however. We have Tony, line one from Fargo.
Tony.
How's it going, buddy?
Hey, not too bad. Just a couple of thoughts about the police cameras and what to expect, what not to, or what people are going to be up in arms about. You know, like you said, cameras, do they stop crimes? No, but, you know, there's plenty of situations downtown that a camera could help to identify.
Sure.
People that commit crimes. Now, the problem I have with it is the tracking. So that I could understand. It's just like a police officer can't pull up behind you and run your tags just to run your tags to see if you're suspended or a known offender or whatever. That's illegal search, basically. But, you know, like you said, if Casey's has a bunch of cameras up and they can catch a crime in progress and they can convict somebody because of it, well, good thing.
Right.
The AI side of things that can actually, like, zoom in on somebody's license plate, maybe not track it, maybe not take it further, but can zoom in and get a person's face or something like that. That's all. That I feels like that falls under the Plainview Doctrine. Recording things. I mean, I can walk around in public and do it all day long. So can the police. So can anybody out there. That's why Casey's does it. That's why, you know, businesses around everywhere does it. The difference is they don't put it in your home, right? You're private at home. You're entitled to your privacy at home. When you're in public, that changes a little bit. Now, police can't illegally search or seize your whatever, but they can still monitor, they can watch, they can record, just like I can, just like they can. So, yes, the tracking side of things, identifying who's who is one thing, but when it comes to a program that can zoom in on different people walking down the street, I'd be all right with that. And if it bothered me and I knew there was something there, then I wouldn't go there. If I didn't know it was there, I mean, this day and age, there's cameras everywhere. I just, when I leave the house, I assume there's a camera on me somewhere. So it's a little gray, but, you know, if it helps to solve crimes, I think that could go a long way. I don't think it's going to help to stop crime, but, you know, that's where I'm at with that.
And Tony, I think your arguments are reasonable. I just want to agree. And here's why. The reason that we started putting cameras downtown was because we started having more just mindless crimes. People go and break windows. Like a Joseph's was one of the people who got his window broken in, and they didn't even steal anything. They just broke his window, right? So he demanded that the city do something about it, and this was a great opportunity for the police chief at the time to say, whoa, I've got a grant here for cameras, so we'll do that. This is a great impetus for that. What my gripe was, hey, Mr. Joseph, buy your own cameras. Why am I on the hook for this? Let's even say that they're perfect and they do everything that they advertise them to do. You're still charging me to watch his property. I don't like that.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's a valid point as well, because then does the grant money then pay for the manpower to watch the video
precisely.
Or to review the tapes?
And it certainly won't buy future cameras that we're doing now. You
correct,
know?
Yeah. That I would agree with. You know, there too, is it an ongoing grant? Is it just the purchase? You know, that's an argument to be said. But as far as, you know, cops throw up some cameras and it catches people walking down the street, I mean, anybody can do it. We could go downtown and put our own cameras up to do it ourselves. That's us paying for it. That's our conscious choice to buy something, to put it somewhere, and to record whoever I want to record. That's not, you know, John Q. Public paying a bunch of tax money to get something, a grant for police officers to put up surveillance. I can see your point both ways.
Let me end with this, and I'll let you have the last word, but what I see the Plainview Doctrine, or the, hey, there's no privacy in public doctrine that people have, I see that as mm-hmm. an individual right. Okay. Individually, if you go out and I'm there too, you can't say, don't take a picture because I'm in the frame, right? You can't say that because you're in public, buddy. You know, and you just happen to walk in front of my camera and I took a picture. Or let's say I'm filming you. All right. You can do that too. You can be weird. That's fine. Yeah. I don't want the government to do that. I don't want the government being weird and like walking next to me and having a camera on my face. When a cop interacts with you and they have that body cam on, you're only in their field of view when they're interacting with you. And you can say, you know what? I don't feel like talking to you. I'm pleading the fifth. I'm getting out of here. I don't want to talk because you have the right to disassociate in the Constitution. And unless you're being held or detained or under arrest, they can't make you stay. But if they follow you around with a camera, I find that creepy, Tony. And that's my last word. I'll let you have the last word.
And creepy is definitely, you know, it sure is creepy, but it doesn't make it wrong. You know, just because something creeps somebody out doesn't mean it's not, you know, it's unacceptable. You know, there's tons of videos online where people just walk around with cameras to solicit police responses.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because, now, where do you draw the line? Does the government not get afforded that ability, or do they get the same rights as an individual? That's the question. And I can see how, because the man is surveilling citizens, how that could go awry.
You betcha.
But, you know, where do you draw the line is the question between individual rights and government rights also.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate the phone call.
Have a great day.
Yeah. You know, to me, I'll just answer this question. I draw the line of them taking a video camera and sticking it on the corner of the street and just following people around. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Didn't like it in 2012, and I definitely don't like it now. And you better believe these cameras are only going to get more sophisticated and better with AI and other things. And it's at what point do you raise your hand and go, hey, guys, maybe that's enough. Maybe I've given you too much of my freedom now, too much of my privacy, and said, hey, now I want you guys to back it off. Because that's what they're doing. They're just testing the waters. And it's not Fargo doing it. It's the government in general. All over the world are doing this. All right, Addison, before we go, because I know we're getting real close here, how about a vote on the spending bills? I'll tell you what. The lodging tax, I'm on the fence. It doesn't affect most people, I don't think. It's not that big of an increase. The sales tax for the dome, no. We already tried that. It's fine. The fire department sales tax, people will say it's only a quarter cent sales tax. It's only got us to 8% sales tax. When I was in college, it was 6. Not that long ago. I mean, it kind of was a long time ago. But 6%, and now it's 2% more for everything you buy, and it went up by a quarter percent, half percent, quarter percent. That's how they get you. They say it's only a little bit more, guys. We have the money to support our police and fire departments, folks. Okay, I went online and I took out $3 million worth of things in this year's budget and didn't lose a thing. You would never have noticed it. That could go right to the fire, right to the police. Very easy to do. When you prioritize the budget and say, well, we just don't have enough for fire and police, then you didn't prioritize fire and police. That's the key. If you prioritize them, there's plenty of money. If you don't prioritize them, there's not enough money. All right, this is the Steve Holmstrom Show, Tony Garrig hosting. I hope you guys had fun. I know I did. Thank you, Addison, for helping me out today. And thank you for all the callers and texters. And we'll see you next time.